I've had a number of people complaining that there was no talk online the last couple of weeks. I will explain that 2 weeks ago there was I had a bat mitzvah in Virginia that I went to, and last week we had an enormous flood. And the week before that, I did make a recording, but the recording didn't record for some reason. And today, this is an audio recording, which I hope records, because the video camera is no longer working. Well, it's a long explanation for why I haven't been speaking. But it's also emblematic of the last month. This has been a complicated period for me, and hard to talk about on some level, because there's no real deep understanding for me of what exactly is going on, but I will try to put it in some perspective. The awakening process releases the person who awakens from what you might call personality, or sometimes call it ego, or the scrim through which we perceive the world. And to have that fall away is an extraordinarily remarkable and liberating experience. And it was certainly my sense that as that fell away, this sense of abiding presence, which was so vast and so powerful, would be the new state of being. And I have to say, it's very desirable. Being in a state of presence is probably as sweet as it gets. It's probably as beautiful as it gets. And there's no you to interfere with it. There's nothing there that interrupts it. And I had this sense that somehow that was the new permanent condition. And it may be for some people. But my experience over the last month particularly, but it started earlier, was all of a sudden presence went away. And so what was being experienced was, we can put it two ways. One of them is what is experienced is what is. But from the non-interpretive space in which this being manifests, there was nothing there. Just nothing. I talked a little bit about it in one of my last, probably my last recorded talk. The sense of there simply being nothing, no thing, no nothing to hold on to, if you will. And it's a rather remarkable and discomforting state. It's not blissful because it has no quality, really. If there was anything at all that was being experienced, it was a kind of sense of loss or emptiness or almost a discomfort, in the sense that absence is the opposite of presence. So there was still some quality to all of this, more of absence than presence. And I have to say, if there was somebody there to try to enjoy it or to experience it, it would have been something to be avoided, if you will. And yet there was no way to avoid it. It is for me, or has been for me, a state of extraordinary, discomforting wholeness, presence. I really believe that it is process. This is all part of process. But I can't even really describe it as process at this point, because I don't know that. I assume that. There's an assumption that this is process. But there is a kind of profound not knowing at all. It's as though everything is being wiped away, and what used to be there to kind of put it all together in some way was Bruce's personality. Just Bruce. Bruce would make sense of it. Bruce would use it in some way. And now there's a certain sense that the Bruce thing isn't really there to function in a way of explaining this, interpreting it, manifesting it in some teacherly way. And part of what's been washed away, if you will, is the teacher itself. And all of the qualities that I used to look at as Bruce, as being kind of nice guy, the stuff that was used to function smoothly in the world, so that I could rely on a certain kind of personality, persona, that would make me, you know, acceptable to the rest of the world. When all of that kind of disappeared, and there was just presence, I thought, well, hey, this is good. I don't need Bruce. I'll just have the presence. But then when the presence disappeared, and there was no Bruce, there was just this series of forces, if you will, series of unexpected dynamics arising, and none of them was particularly clarified. You couldn't make sense of it. So there's a lot of disruptive, eruptive stuff. So I found a lot of anger coming up, a lot of deep unknowing. And all of this has been arriving at a very interesting time, which is that I have retired from my career. So I am no longer identified with being a filmmaker or a writer. And in some even more uncomfortable way, I no longer really identified with being, in my own mind, if you will, a teacher or anything. So there is no agenda left for me in my life. Waking up in the morning has no agenda. For the first few weeks after I came back from London, I was here and my granddaughter was here, and that was why I woke up in the morning, because seeing my granddaughter was a remarkable thing and filled me with just this incredible love. And then they went back to California, and so I would try to wake up in the morning and go, okay, now what? I'm told by friends of mine who have retired that this is not unusual to have an experience of now what coming toward you, when there is really nothing on the plate. And when you have no identity, familiar identity to bring to that, the sense of emptiness is even more remarkable. It's like this broad, endless plain and nothing there to engage. And I know this is part of a process, or I sense that. And I really sense that with the metaphorical experience and the very physical experience of the Hurricane Irene. Because in this incredible period of emptiness, this vast storm came. And the storm came and overwhelmed us on many levels. A lot of people were affected more dramatically, some less dramatically, but it really overran our property. It took the body that is me, in a sense, because I feel very much like, I describe it as metaphor, but that the property itself represents being. The property was ravaged by water. This water just came surging over it and wiped bridges away, wiped the road away, the driveway. It broke down the dam that held the pond together. It just swept things out of our parameters, and it was really remarkable to watch. One, that there had to be a response to this, and at first Blanche and I tried to keep water from coming in the house, and were somewhat successful at that, actually. We moved things off of porches in order to keep them from blowing away, but ultimately there wasn't much we could do. We just had to sit and observe this unbelievable force of nature. And in a certain sense, it's a very beautiful thing, because you really do learn how small you are and insignificant you are in the midst of such powerful forces. When the storm subsided and the waters left us, I did a big tour of the property to see the damage. And some of it's immediately visible right in front of us. The driveway was basically, whole sections of it were gone. And much of the hillsides, some of our hillsides were washed away. The pond was down to not quite a stream, but not a pond. And what was revealed was everything beneath the surface. The surface was exposed. And in its exposure were all of the rocks, if you will, the muck at the bottom of the pond. And I looked at all of this as myself. And what was exposed was all of the underlying stuff. Without presence, let's call it the ocean of love, to cover everything, there was all of this density and muck that was there. And having it exposed doesn't look good. There's nothing pretty about a lot of it, although some of it actually is pretty. But much of it looks wounded. And you look at all of that and you go, wow, I didn't realize that was there. And while that was going on, I could feel internally that I too was reaching the muck, if you will, of this being. That stuff I thought I had was free of because of the awakening was not freed at all. There was still this density of stuff still there, needing to be broken down, needing to be exposed. And it was a very powerful realization. And I looked at it the other day as thinking, you know, there's this metaphor of, I am not the drop, I am the ocean, which is a wonderful metaphor, and it's really something you experience when awakening takes place. You're no longer the drop, you're the entire ocean. And so you go, wow, I'm the ocean. I am that. And then the ocean disappears. And there you are. What are you? There's this unbelievable density beneath the ocean, this core entity. It's still there. you are still there. It's not you as the personality, if you will. It's you. It's the self. It's this very powerful, dense, and real thing. And it, too, needs, I think, to either be accepted or acknowledged or penetrated. Perhaps one reaches into its molten core. I don't know. All I can tell you is it's still there and it's still functioning as part of my current work. I really thought on some level that awakening was an ending to spiritual effort. And truly what it is the beginning of spiritual effort. Or if not the beginning of a new segment of spiritual practice. And it's not for the faint of heart. It's real, molten, core-level stuff. And it's there. And it's pretty amazing. And as you go through it, as you go into it, there is still, within its unbelievable density, this immaterial lightness of being. And I know that because in sitting down to teach today, it was expressing itself as light. And the miracle of spiritual work, the miracle of all of this, is that in spite of all the manifested intensity and density and power of manifestation, there is still somewhere within it this unnameable truth. I don't want to call it presence or emptiness, fullness or nothingness, because it defies all of that. When I finish meditating with you, I look up at the tanka of the Buddha sitting there, and I went, here's this amazing picture of this big Buddha surrounded by all these disciples. And I thought, this is not exactly as it should be depicted. Because the idea of making Buddha so large is that it gives you the sense of that somehow Buddhahood makes you bigger, makes you supreme in some vast way, which perhaps is true. But what I kept thinking was, if that was really a true depiction of the state that I am now becoming aware of, Buddha would be the size of a tiny fleck of paint on that tanka. A tiny speck of paint, possibly off in a corner somewhere. That would be the totality of Buddhahood. But the magical, extraordinary underlying truth of that is that little tiny speck of paint was all there is, and knew it, and was emanating it. That tiny nothingness was unnameably real. Without description, without color, without form, without understanding, without meaning, without anything, it is. So that in the midst of this sitting today, this tiny fleck of nothingness fills the room. the journey for all of us, as far as I can tell, and I don't even know that I should be talking at this point because it's so much in process, and I think there's no ultimate understanding here. But the sense that I have, and I think that we've talked about from day one in this class, is one gets worn down and worn down and worn down and worn down and worn down. And when you think you can't be worn down anymore, it wears you down more. And every part of it you're aware of, every part of it you're conscious of. And some of it feels beautiful and some of it feels horrible. And some days are exquisitely wonderful and some days are exquisitely awful. And it's still going on. And somehow in meditation, one gets a taste of, or a full meal of, presence, and it becomes very desirable. And I've often said this, the problem is that you have that experience and you want to have it more. You want to have it. But the truth of that experience is not having, it's the exact opposite. The experience of presence is not having. It's letting go of everything and just being. My suspicion is that when presence itself evaporates, even the density of the nothingness that remains will fall away until there is isness. So I'm telling you all this, this may be way beyond what you want to hear or what you understand at this point. But it still feels to me better to be in the presence of, bad choice of words, but in truth than in denial of truth. In escape from truth, in delusion and illusion. So many people are sitting here because they want release from you know, Shakespeare said the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, when it seems to me what you ultimately arrive at is an embrace of or an allowing of the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. I hope I'm not confusing you completely, but I think it's important to articulate what's going on here, because I really think it demystifies in some way and removes us from this illusion of escaping truth or escaping our suffering or escaping anything. There is no escape. There is no escape. It's not to be escaped. It just is what it is. And it is to be exposed. It is to be arrived at, it is to be unfolded, it is to be acknowledged, it is to be one with. So if you're hoping for an easy way out, I don't think it exists. And I may be really at odds with a lot of people who are of the awakening or the awakened community, because I think there's a lot of people who feel they have arrived. And I think that's true. They have arrived at something. But ultimately, the the arrival and that which and the one that has arrived at it do not exist. I mean, they exist in that moment, but the truth is deeper than that. So I wish I could wind this up with some kind of perfect something to make you feel better or feel good about anything. I'm not trying to make you feel bad. I'm just trying to say to you that this is where I'm talking from today. Next week may be different or not, but I think whatever it is, this is it's the path we're on. And there's nobody who's not on it. And I would ask for questions, except I don't know if I can answer them. I'll try.
I don't think I could ask them.
Okay.
I could ask a question. You don't have to answer it, but it's a question. The process of facing the truth, feeling the truth, going deep into that dense place, and then letting go. In a way, it feels like a dichotomy, that you're in it, you're facing it, you're feeling it, and then, so what is the process of also letting it go?
Let's forget the words letting go right now. Or let's put it this way. There you are facing it. The thing you can let go of is that which struggles with that. Facing it, the thing that looks at it and fights it,
so that letting go of
is just let it,
exactly.
let it be. Let's use that instead of let go. Let it be. Don't fight your own truth. Don't fight what's there. Let it be. Let go is a very, let go makes you think you're going to be able to walk away from it and it will go away. It doesn't go away. It is. So let it be. Letting it be is its own teaching. Surprising teaching. And we'll have many of the after effects of letting it go. Only instead of letting it go, you just go, okay, this is what it is. You know? That's important.
Letting it be, not holding on. And
not doing anything. Just let it be. Let it be.
I just want to thank you for so eloquently explaining something which is probably unexplainable. You must be really trying to find words for it.
Yeah, I don't know how. I know it's inarticulate, and I really do question the person who's talking it, saying it. I don't know that I'm teaching you anything true. I actually don't know. But I do know this is what the moment is, and I'm trying to articulate it because somehow you have all arrived here for me to sit here, and it's what happens. And sitting and teaching the class was full of, it was very full. It was a really very full experience. It was not, it in no way felt like the emptiness that I often throughout the last month have experienced. It felt very full. I don't know what the next moment will bring, but it all seems to arrive of its own nature. It just comes. It's quite extraordinary. If you watch weather maps, if you watch the weather map of a storm, it's really fascinating because they have them on the Weather Channel and on my computer, and you can see everything looks clear, and then right out of nowhere, 10 miles from your house, a thing bursts, a huge thing happens of a storm that comes out of nowhere. You watch, you track these storms moving to you and they disappear, or they go to the north of you or to the south of you, and you go, oh, I've avoided that storm. And then one just materializes right near where you live, out of nowhere. It's not predicted. It's not following a curve. It's not part of some long progression. It just happens. And the next thing you know, it drops a ton of water on your house, and it goes away. And it looks like it was just for you. Who knows? We think, oh, if we see the big patterns, we get it. We don't get it. We don't get it because there's no way to get it. It's only going to be what it is, and it's going to always be what it is, and you have to be there available. And the great thing is, when you have a personality and a persona and all of that to deal with this, then you go, well, I can handle this. But when there's nothing there except raw bodyhood, there's a body here with a mind, of course, and it has a history, but it's just this thing that's going to relate to it. And it's going to get really angry. And it's going to get really happy. And it's going to do all of these things, which it does. But it's not really you as such. You don't own it. And there's nobody there now assembling this as part of you, of your history. It's just happening. But there's this anger, and there's this beauty, and there's this fear, and there's this anxiety, and there's this wonder, all coming up, just like those little bursts of thunder that come out of nowhere, or storms that arise out of nothing. There it is, and then it's gone. Or it's not gone. You know, this storm that left us is gone, but we have weeks and months of cleanup. So it's gone, but it's not gone. It's exposed stuff that's to be dealt with. I got to deal with a mucky pond and huge crevices in our lawn, with stones, and it's kind of amazing. And then you repair and you fix and you do it, and then who knows, another storm comes. And and we all know, we're living in turbulent times. Weather is not going to be what it was. No, we all know that. It's all going to be different. It's going to be a much more volatile period for everybody. And if you look at the political landscape and the economic landscape, this is a really unbelievable time for all of us. We've not lived through this kind of stuff before. And so we've got a lot to work with. And it's going to do one of two things. It's going to make us very defended, or it's going to make us very vulnerable to what is in a very big way. But that big vulnerability, I think, is going to break us down and wash stuff away and expose us to the muck that we never knew was there at the bottom of our very own internal pond. And it's all going to get lifted up, washed, ultimately, I think, washed away in some way. And then there will be just bedrock. And then bedrock will be what you are. Bedrock. What does that mean? I don't know. It's pretty powerful.
It seems like the flood really is a metaphor. And what happened to your pond really is, when it had structure, it was a pond. When you had the structure, when you were Bruce Rubin, screenwriter, whatever, you had the structure, you decide to get rid of that structure.
I had nothing to do with it, but go ahead. Yeah.
Well, okay. But the structure of the dam exposed what was underneath,
mm-hmm.
or the lack of structure mm-hmm. exposed what was underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing is happening in your life, and you're getting deeper and deeper. Yet, the first thing you say is, well, Blanche and I have a lot to deal with. We have to rebuild. And then I have to ask the question, but why? Why not let it be?
Well, I mean, personally, I just think that there are things we can't do anything about, mm-hmm. and there are things we can. And the things we can, for example, the pond for me was quite lovely.
It was beautiful.
So the pond, so now for me to rebuild a dam is not like a big deal. You rebuild a dam and the water comes back. Now I know it's at the bottom of that pond. I may even dredge the pond. It's a very expensive operation, but just to give it more depth, if you will, so that more can flow in it and through it. So it gives me an opportunity to do that. But, metaphors only go so far, and I think in this particular metaphor, what I mostly see is that you put the word depth and opportunity, two things coming through all of this, and I think those are two words that mean a great deal to me. But I have to say, at the same time, seeing the pond in this condition, seeing the the rawness of the landscape is not pretty. It's just not pretty in the traditional sense of what I think of is pretty.
But that's exactly what you're speaking of.
Yes.
You're saying that's what underneath is not pretty, and that it is what it is.
Right, right.
And it seems like for your personal self, you're ready at this point to say it is what it is.
Yes. That's why I said where the metaphor breaks down. I mean, I can rebuild the pond, I'm not sure that what's gone on internally for me has any kind of rebuilding to do. If anything, it's more breaking down. It's just a continual breaking down, a little bit like the Grand Canyon. You know, you just keep going deeper. People find the Grand Canyon beautiful. I think the people who lived on that land when it first started to break apart maybe weren't quite so happy about it. Anybody else?
I think that destruction and creation and the opportunity to rebuild is all part of the process and part of the growth process and the opportunity.
Well,
I think so.
You know, I think it seems to be what the world is about. You know, we build and things get torn down, and we rebuild and they get torn down, and it's just the nature of life cycles. And you know, we find ourselves in various places along along the spectrum of building and tearing down. And each of us has to follow the thing that's happening in our own particular life. Some people are building, some people are tearing down. Everybody's doing something at their given moment. Many people are just sustaining. You know, the Hindus are very smart in their religion. They have a god of creation, a god of sustaining, and a god of destruction. And they all work simultaneously, and we have to all be part of, you know which god to invoke at any given moment.
I'm hearing you say, leave my bliss be, leave my anger be. And I feel that on the inside, but then there's this the level of working on the outside with people and the way and how I would express that.
Well, I've found myself being angrier with people, and Bruce doesn't do that. Bruce never used to do that, but it's coming up, and I'm going, okay, it's what's there. You know, it's just what's happening. I don't know. It may not be happening tomorrow, but if it happens, it happens. And there it is. It's real, you know.
Can you talk more about truth? How to realize what is truth?
How to realize what is truth? I think it's to know that this moment is real. And try not to see it through your own interpretation of it, just as it is. And finding what it is that... What deciphers the world is your mind. Each of us, when we're very young, starts to be told, this is good, this is bad, this is hot, this is cold, don't do this, do that. You start to have all of these ideas, and they become who you think you are. You know, I watch how it works. I watch it with Talia. You know, she's starting to be told, no, 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 yes, yes, don't eat sand, don't eat dirt. You know, she's learning rules about life in the world, and ultimately they become the thing through which you see everything. That person who's been instructed has a scrim, a veil through which the world appears. Some people have many, many, many layers to that veil. It's, or the, you know, the Bible calls it through a glass darkly. The glass gets very dark, and we don't really see what's coming at us. So as we work through meditation to clean the glass, or to remove the glass, or to remove the veils, truth starts to come through more directly without being interpreted. And what we find when that happens is that a lot of the interpretation that we have actually makes us feel good and makes us feel protected and makes us feel we understand what's going on. Take away understanding. Take away your identity. Take away your sense of what do I do in the morning. Take away everything that has ever defined you. And what are you? And what is it that's coming through? There will be an enormous amount of truth in that. Whether it's the truth, I can't tell you, but it's certainly a truth. And it will feel that way. You'll know it. It will feel real. This is real. And real doesn't always feel good or comfortable or appealing to you. It just is. And the thing that is feeling good or bad, that part of you starts to slowly work its way through. And you thought it was all gone until it's not. I talked this morning about Nisargadatta, who, you know, was one of the great exponents of this non-dualistic Advaita yoga. And at the end of his life, when he was in constant pain from cancer of the throat because he smoked his whole life, he was angry and unhappy and in pain. and kind of cursing life in a way. And here's this very awakened guy, but I'm sure he wasn't sitting there going, I shouldn't be doing this because people think I am awakened. He's just being what he is. And that's all any of us can do, is be what we are. And you don't even know what you are until you start to strip away everything. And when you strip away everything, you go, what is this? What is this? Or, like in my situation, you wake up in the morning and you go, now what? Now what? Everything I have ever done, my whole life has been programmed into me to have something to do. What do you do when there is no program? Well, there's nothing to do. It's really interesting. You know, Blanche always complains that I have no projects. Well, I don't have any projects. I've never had projects. I've always had work. And when the work was done, I was happy to have no projects, just to relax. Now I have no projects and no work. That's really interesting. There's nothing there. So, to me, that's very real. What's going to happen with that, I don't know. But there's a part of me that is very uncomfortable. But I really think that discomfort is part of how the world works. It doesn't want you to sit there without reaching for the next thing, whatever that may be. But I have no idea what that next thing is.
Make a list.
Make a list? I have, it's a very small list. Anyway. Thank you guys for coming. Who knows what next week will bring. There will be class here next week. And I think, yeah, the week after. And then I'm going to LA for a couple of weeks, and then I'll be back here for the fall. And then, as I think I've described to you, come January through April, I'll be in New York City. So I may, therefore, come up here or have people come to the city and have classes there, but I'll be on the East Coast for the winter as opposed to the West Coast this year. So anyway, thank you all very much for coming. Blanche, I'm going to turn it over to you, but I'm going to stop recording.